The Army Corps of Engineers' new commander, Lieutenant General Todd Semonite, has been on the job for about just 8 months. As former Army talent management chief, he knows how to motivate people. As a lifelong engineer, he likes to build things to last. In his first interview as commander, Semonite told me how long a view the Corps takes when considering its mission.
One of the things the Corps of Engineers has to do is always to look out deep. What do we need to do 20, 30 years out to be able to make sure that we're setting up America for success, both in our waterways and also in our environment? So the strategic plan really looks at how do we continue to take care of the facilities that we have now, but at the same time, continue to try to be able to update those to be able to make sure that we can support the nation. Our mission in the Corps of Engineers is to be able to take care of national security, to energize the economy, and to be able to reduce disaster risk. So the Civil Works mission is the key on that part that talks about energizing the economy. And what's critical here, Tom, is that we've got to be able to make sure that we're taking care of the inland waterways, we're taking care of harbor deepenings, but we also got to do this in concert with the environment. And so we do a lot of environmental restoration, things like Everglades restoration, things like taking care of the wetlands and the waterways. And it's a balance. Every day in the Corps of Engineers, we have to balance with what does navigation do? How do we continue to take care of that environment? So there's really a couple different big goals there. One of those is to be able to make sure that we're thinking through an integrated system on the whole way through. With the overarching strategy has to be able to look at every single part of our portfolio in a very, very systemic way. And so it can't just be about the economy or the environment. We have to look through the depth of how all those things come together. And so the couple big things I want to talk about. First of all, we've got to be collaborative and we've got to partner with all the rest of the interagencies. There's no part of the Corps of Engineers Civil Works program that stands alone by itself.
I wanted to ask you about that,
yeah, sure.
Too. You mentioned water, environment. What about Interior Department, EPA? How do those
exactly
come into this
right.
whole
and so
complex?
When you think about, and I'll use an example here of a reservoir if you want, but when you think of one of our parts of our program, we are there to be able to provide maybe the structure, but the uses of that affect all of the different parts of the interagency, but also of the state and local people. So we've got to talk to everybody to be able to make sure that we understand what's the need, what's the use, and what are the ramifications of some of those things. We've got to be able to make sure we're thinking about risk. And so a good example, when you think about a reservoir, okay, there's a couple different reasons for running a reservoir. One of those is flood control. If you leave the reservoir relatively empty, you've got a lot of room to be able to take an emerging flood. But on the other hand, there's another reason there, which talks about water supply and taking care of water. The more water you keep in there, then if there is a drought, then we're going to be able to have more capability to be able to mitigate that. So where's the balance on how empty, how full is it? How do we talk to all the stakeholders? How do we talk to the other interagencies? And then how are we adaptive? Let's assume that we've had several years of drought and we haven't had a lot of snow melt. Then we can afford to take a little bit more risk in some of those reservoirs and to be able to let that be a little bit more fuller. If we have like California right now where you have a lot of water that's out there, then clearly you want to leave more room for flood control. So I think that's where we've got to continue to think about where's the risk-informed decision-making and how do we continue to be adaptive. This strategic plan you're asking about is five different parts of those kind of decisions to be able to make sure that as we think through the program in the years ahead, we're collaborative, we're being very innovative, but we're also trying to watch out for resources. And resources is
sure.
a critical part of this equation.
Now, there are, you mentioned dams and reservoirs, big water-related projects. Where does the Army Corps of Engineers have jurisdiction? For example, I'm thinking of, the reservoir in the middle of New York City in Central Park.
Sure.
Suppose that needs dredging and cleaning. Where do you begin and where do state and local and municipal facilities end?
So if you look at dams, and we've got about 700 large dams, there are dams by all different types of entities. There are Bureau of Rec dams. There are state dams. California has got a lot of state dams. There's a lot of local dams. So the dams that the Corps of Engineers controls are really ones that were approved by Congress with an authorized purpose. And this is what's critical. Not all dams are the same. Some might have a recreation component. Some might have a hydro component. hydropower. Some obviously have some more flood control. Some have water and water supply to be able to take care of species in the environment. So every one of those dams has an individual set of rules, and then we have what's called a water control manual, kind of a book that we go to be able to keep all those things in place. But the federal projects that we control are ones that were approved by Congress. We get money to continue to maintain them, and we must follow the laws of those authorized purposes to be able to make sure we're consistent with why they were approved.
And when you think about that Oroville Dam in California, that seems like that's a state dam, but it seems like a great place for the Army to maybe come in and help a little bit.
Well, so that's a great question. So we do have 700. We're very, very concerned about our dams. But that's a good example where the state, mainly because of a lot of the drought, there were some challenges out there. As soon as that happened, we flew about 10 of our experts in, and we do have world-class dam experts, to be able to continue to advise them on some opportunities. The state has done a great job of responding already to that. But also, we were doing things like these large, big white sandbags you see that the helicopters deliver. We have a lot of stockage of those kind of things to be able to take care of our dams. I think what's important for the Corps is to continue to be willing to learn from others. That's both things that go well and things that don't go well. And what was the proximate cause of this issue out there in Oroville? And then the day that happened, we went back to all of our teams and said, is there any chance that what happened in Oroville could happen on ours? And there was a lot of constriction of some of the soil, I think, out there. We have a very robust inspection program to be able to look at all of our spillways and all of our dams. We assess every one of our dams every single year with a kind of a risk factor. There's a different numerical guide. And then when we get money to be able to keep those dams up and running, we go with the worst first. We continue to buy that risk down. But I think as we talk about whether it's state, local, or the other federal agencies, what are some lessons learned that our other people are doing, and how do we continue to wrap those kind of lessons learned back into our portfolio to make sure we're taking care of our dams?
When it comes to financial management, are you integrated with the greater Army or with DFAS, or is that something that is local to the Corps?
So again, a confusing question. The Army, Army Corps of Engineers work for several different stakeholders. In the Department of Defense, we're located into a Department of Defense database systems called GFIBS, and we're tied into that. But in the Corps of Engineers, for several years, we've had to create our own financial management system. If you're one of the Corps of Engineer employees, you basically document your time every day within 15-minute increments. Just think about how detailed that is. So if you're working for Project A to Project B, so at the end of the day, every one of our 34,000 employees, we know exactly where they work for, so we're very, very, we're able to be very, very clear. On the Civil Works program, this is about the $5 billion we do for the federal government. We've had 9 straight years of auditability correctness on that. We pass audits for 9 years straight. It's something that I know the Department of Defense is trying to do in the rest of the other side.
And
of,
the Armed
of our,
Services individually.
The Armed Service as well. And so we want to make sure that the same level of discipline and rigor that we're putting into Civil Works accountability, we continue to see that throughout all the rest of the other areas that we work for.
Now, you're the commander of the Army Corps of Engineers. You're also the chief of engineers, and that's a distinct But that's a distinction, isn't it?
That's right, Tom. And I'm very excited to have this job. I've been in the Army 37 years. I've been in this particular job for about 8 months now. But one of the main things is the chief of engineers is that you are the senior engineer in the Army, and by default, because you're a 3-star, I mean, we're the senior engineer in the Department of Defense. So there's many, many things we have to do for General Milley, the head of the Army, to advise him on staff engineer functions. Another major portion of that is that I'm in charge for the readiness of 90,000 total engineer soldiers. This is active guard and reserve. We have soldiers deployed all around the world and today, and to be able to make sure that if called upon and our Army needs to step up, our engineer soldiers have to be able to do what they need to do. But the third area is
what do they need to do?
Primarily on the battlefield, if we've got to be able to get the maneuver forces into the enemy to be able to get into an area that's hard to do that, we have mobility tasks to be able to move our forces into restricted areas. On the other hand, we do defensive-type tasks if we ever go into the defense. But we also do an awful lot of support things, bridging on the battlefield. How do we get them across waterways? How do we build base camps? So anything that the maneuver force needs, then one of our 90,000 engineers is going to step up and be able to make sure you can complete your mission. position.
So you've got lots of types of engineers.
We do. And the nice thing about having this dual hat is that I'm able to take some of the expertise of the Corps of Engineers and support the engineer regiment, those 90,000 soldiers in a regiment. And on the other hand, there's a lot that we try to continue to cross-fertilize to be able to work talent management back and forth across this seam. So it really is a, and that's probably the job I'm proudest of, is of being able to champion those 90,000 soldiers every single day.
Lieutenant General Todd Semonite is commander of the Army Corps of Engineers. We discuss an overseas infrastructure project that's not unlike some right here in the United States.
I want to hop over to Mosul, back in the right hands, at least marginally. You've had a role there in the dam there and in other functions. What's going on?
We did. So I'll tie this back to this idea about engineering solutions for the nation's toughest challenges. We have 700 dams. We'll talk more about that later. But we're very, very good at being able to keep a dam intact, to know how to maintain a dam. There was a large dam that Saddam Hussein built in Mosul several years ago. The foundation of that dam was cracking all the time. Even when they built the dam. It's concrete. They knew that they were going to have to grout it. So the Iraqis were doing this for several years. When ISIS came in, those local laborers were either run off or killed. And so then for a couple years, there was no grouting done in this particular dam. So what the Army's been asked to do and the Corps of Engineers is, under the support of both the U.S., the State Department, and the Iraqi government, is to come in and work with a contractor. This is actually an Italian contractor, to be the oversight, the construction manager of the project, to go back and to make that grout, to be able to continue to be able to make that grouting work. So we've got a team that's down inside the dam. They actually have 9 great big drilling machines. They drill every single day about holes that go anywhere from 30 to 100 feet down, and they pump the grout back in. So what that does over time is it stabilizes that foundation, and it makes that dam much, much safer. Here's the issue. Because obviously Iraq is in an arid area, they needed the water to be able to work irrigation and to work water supply. So they didn't actually ever take a lot of that water down. We were very concerned. If you have a dam that's on a shaky foundation with a lot of water, the end state is there was a threat, the probability that if that dam ever broke, it could have killed hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq. So we're in Iraq right now. Obviously, the Department of Defense is working side by side with the Iraqi Army, doing an outstanding job in Mosul. But our guys are in there to be able to do our job, which is to continue to keep that dam safe. And here's the critical part, is to be able to train the Iraqis how to do this. So this is a short-term mission. So when we leave, we want them to take over all the machines. They're trained to do it. And we're going to validate them and make sure that we've set the conditions now so we can depart and they can run the dam after we leave.
What about the Hoover Dam? Who takes care of that one?
So that's not one of ours, okay? That's a Bureau of Wreck Dam. And so there are a lot of these where, and it's kind of interesting because when you think about what our dams do and the other dams, you could have a river with 20 or 30 dams along the river. And maybe the first one, the fifth one, and the tenth one are a Corps of Engineers. Then you could have some of the other interagencies want to have them. Then you might have a state dam and a local dam. So this is when we think about the Civil Works program and this issue of systems. It has to be a system. It has to be a system in how do all of those dams work side by side. It also has to be a system through time. How do we, whatever we did 50 years ago to build the dam, how do we make sure that that dam evolves so it's taking care of the needs today? We do a lot of work with supporting the habitat, fish passage, to be able to make sure that the environment's taken care of. The dam's got enough water that if we've got to let water out to take care of breeding and species downstream, we try to do that as well. So it's this whole idea of systems in a linear system along a river, but also systems in time to be able to be adaptive.
And when there are multiple jurisdictions along a riverway, for example, are there councils or boards of dam overseers that you participate in?
Several different venues. There are some rivers that have a very tight, like a commission. The Mississippi River has a commission. And then all of those equities of all those stakeholders are all laid out, and they know how that works. I think there's other ones that are not quite as robust, and that's where sometimes you have to get together with this issue of collaboration. Bring the stakeholders together, figure out what can happen. If everybody does exactly what they have agreed to do, then most of the time that's a balanced system. The challenge is Mother Nature gets a vote. And all of a sudden, if we've had several years of drought, then those systems are not necessarily adequate enough to be able to take care of all the equities that that dam is supposed to take care of. So it's hard to be able to take care of water supply, recreation, hydro, flood control. It's like balancing the equation with several variables that is almost impossible. impossible to do if you don't have enough water.
I wanted to ask you about VA construction, Veterans Affairs. You were directed by Congress to take over a really way over budget project, the now infamous project of Aurora, Colorado. But that, I guess that's not where it really ends for you.
So let me be a little bit more holistic here. We are authorized to work for anyone in the interagency under the Economy Act. So when somebody else in the interagency perhaps doesn't have enough engineers or an engineering arm and they want to ask us to support, then again, that's based on their funding. They bring us in and we work for them. And we are working for probably 15 different elements of the interagency. We're very, very proud to work with the VA right now, to partner with them. We're working in about 14 different projects. Some of these are hospitals, some of these are clinics, some of these are rehabs versus new, but about 8 different states. I think the total cost is about $7 billion. But the one you're talking about, the Aurora Hospital, was one that was started out in Colorado, and then we've been asked to come back in and get that back on track. It's about 80% done right now, and I think the neat thing is, I was in there just a couple months ago, but when you walk, it's actually 12 different buildings with a center spine, so a veteran can walk down through the center hallway and go into Clinic 1 or Clinic 2 or Lab 1 or whatever. And when you walk through those buildings, there's a four-man team at every one of those 12 buildings. And it's the VA, it's a Corps of Engineer rep, and then there's actually two different companies that are teaming together. It's a rep from each one of those companies. And those four people, they own that building. They're going to talk all the time. The VA gets the big vote, and we're making sure that all those are done so that the veterans and their families, about 400,000 people in that particular hospital, will be serviced when that thing gets done, so we can make sure that we're bringing that home for the Veterans Administration. I have to tell you, the VA has done a great job of quality of making sure that they're investing in these kind of facilities to take care of their veterans.
But at some point, the taxpayers become part of this. In that case, the hospital was almost 100% over budget, 100% past its timetable. I mean, it was really an out-of-control situation.
And that's where we need to make sure that we understand what the VA wants to get done. We understand the amount of money that Congress has appropriated them to do that. And then as a result, it's our job to be able to make sure we're staying within that. One of the biggest themes that I've really taken on here is the new chief is this idea of deliver the program. If we get asked to step up for a project and we get the appropriate amount of people and the appropriate amount of money, then we've got to come through. And this is one I'm very proud to say that our team, we put a top-notch team out there. But it goes back to be able to make sure it stays on program. I won't say as to how the project got to where it was. That's before we came in. But I know that we watch this at the highest levels of the Corps of Engineers right now on those VA projects. And our job is to anticipate a problem long before it happens so we can surge in the right kind of people and get ahead of it.
You mentioned the challenges. You've mentioned some of the great strengths of the Corps. What do you see after 8 months, and what would you like to do in the next 8 months?
So I think it really goes back to the opportunities. There's always going to be challenges. Most of those happen when the phone rings. The question is, where are there great opportunities for us to step up? We are excited to continue to do more and more work with other parts of DOD. If you aren't aware, we're working an awful lot with the Air Force and the Navy right now on helping augment some of their engineering programs and build a lot of buildings for them. We're doing a lot of work for the rest of the Department of Defense. We're doing a lot of work with the Defense Logistics Agency. And we're also doing a lot of work with the Missile Agency, where they've asked us to come in and do some construction for some of the missile sites. So where are there opportunities in DOD to step up? I think the other question is this whole idea of the interagency. Where else can we do for the EPA? What else can we do for Fish and Wildlife? Or what else can we do for the Department of the Interior? We have a very robust program for the Everglades, billions of dollars of work. We're excited about wherever we can go in and do ecosystem restoration. And it goes back to, I think, this idea of balance. Where the Panama Canal just got widened. I was down there for the ribbon cutting a couple months ago. And most of our harbors in America are just not deep enough to take care of some of these new ships that are coming through. So for the last 4 or 5 years, we've had a pretty robust plan approved by Congress to go in and deepen some of the selective harbors. I'll just use an example. The New York Harbor, that whole harbor pretty much had to be deepened by about 5 feet. When you deepen a harbor, sometimes you have materials down there that are just hard to be able to put in the right kind of place. But we have a concept called beneficial use. How can we take the stuff that comes out of the bottom of the harbor and actually help it to be able to help habitat? So every one of those cubic yards went to be able to build a wetlands. We might have capped an old landfill somewhere. We might have put in nature areas. And that's where I think the real benefit of the Corps is. How can we take two problems and have them solve each other?
Lieutenant General Todd Semonite is commander of the Army Corps of Engineers.